When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back to the ultimate Johnny Vedmore show of the week on today's News Talk TNT. Let's start the second hour with a little reminder of what's at stake before we go on to speak to my next guest about certain things that are associated with this as well. We're now at a point in history where either the coming events will be studied for thousands of years, or it will be remembered as the point where we lost our humanity completely. Artificial intelligence technology has entered a new phase over the past several years, where instead of AI algorithms learning from humans, they are now teaching themselves, changing their own algorithms as they learn. We are on the cusp of letting go of control entirely so early on because of a few small companies who have quietly been given free rein under the guise of protecting our digital lives, all within a tech sector that is moving so fast that we can no longer see what's just around the bend. The entire free-thinking population of Earth would love a little more time to discuss such epochal change. However, the technocrats and scientists supported by venture capitalists are already putting into action the future before the masses even have a chance to consider discussing its consequences. With very little legislation governing AI technologies on the books, our governments are eager to get every tech pioneer inventing whilst there's no accountability for any resulting harm. We're not talking major societal disruption, we're talking about potential extinction level event of our own creation, where we should be taking cautious baby steps. Instead, we're expecting to fly just by letting go. We are about to experience a monumental change in technology, starting with next generation cybersecurity that will then move quickly into the unknown. Unsupervised AI now running on critical networks throughout the world as a cybersecurity product is evolving its own algorithm without the need for humans to be involved. Meanwhile, the wealthy patrons funding this cutting-edge future tech are out in force, working to propel our society into a new, unexplored, and dystopian technological frontier. But who are the companies that these eager, wealthy venture capitalists are funding to create an autonomous, AI-powered cyber defense system like we've never seen before? Are they even companies at all when we consider their deep and direct ties to the intelligence agencies? Should these firms instead be reclassified as simply extensions of state intelligence apparatus, acting without the restrictions of public accountability? Many of these companies have been built by teams of former intelligence operatives, some of who have sat in the highest echelons of the intelligence apparatus of their respective countries. MI5 and CIA both carry considerable weight in this sinister-sounding enterprise, or enterprises, but it is Israeli Unit 8200 that are the main group capitalizing on this advance into the world-altering realm of unsupervised artificial intelligence algorithms. Yet, these very companies appear to be selling a defense against a potential apocalypse that they themselves may be responsible for. They have the solutions to everyone's cyber woes, or at least that's the image they wish to portray. These are some of the most dangerous intelligence operations masquerading as cyber security companies on planet Earth. We shouldn't be this naive, but unfortunately, as fallible humans, we can be lazy, and we have relinquished our control to technology. This will only become more extreme until, if we're not careful, we relinquish our humanity too. Now, how do you feel or fancy a bank holiday weekend at a music festival for the Truth and Freedom Tribe, with 30 awake artists, including Danny Rambling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles, and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. Oh, this is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth in the world. A Stand in the Park and the Light Paper present Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under five come free, unless you've got 100 of them. No, you could still probably bring 100, baby. Ah, there is no better bargain anywhere. Visit their website now to make sure you don't miss out on what is going to be a brilliant weekend for the whole Freedom family. That's standinthelight.uk. And if you missed your favorite TNT show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT website. We are also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there is no reason to miss out on anything on TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
On Thursday, the U.S. Army quietly released a rather disturbing new recruitment video for a little-known psychological operations warfare unit. And here to tell us about it, of course, joining me once again is TNT News producer, my favorite man around, Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Tell us more about this terribly dystopian U.S. Army psychological operations advert then.
Well, I'd like to say I'm happy to, but I'm not, because it is extremely disturbing. I was quite taken aback by the first time they did this, because this is actually a sequel, and it's this is crazy. First of all, I mean, we live in a world now where we can openly talk about the fact that, you know, in my instance here in America, the Army, the U.S. Army, has a psychological operations division. Whereas not that long ago, to talk about such things, you're just either a historian who's well-read or a crazy cuckoo tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorist, right? A la Alex Jones. But yeah, so 2 years ago, exactly, to the day yesterday, was when they released the first video. It was called Ghosts in the Machine. It was a very bizarre, kind of more cryptic, very perplexing kind of video. Had a lot of people scratching their heads, a lot of people analyzing it. I had almost forgotten about it, to be completely honest with you. And then this, just yesterday, very early in the mornings of Thursday, I guess to celebrate the two, this is 2 years after the first one, we have part two, Ghosts in the Machines 2. This is courtesy of the U.S. Army's Psychological Operations. We have a branch named the 4th PSYOP Group. That's the name of the YouTube channel where you can find this. If you just go to YouTube, type U.S. Army 4th PSYOP Group, and you'll find it. And wow, good luck with this one. The way the video starts is just a plain, like a, there's no sound in the very beginning. It's a blank screen, and there's a quote from Nobel Prize winning author John Steinbeck printed up there, and it says, "I am a little man, and this is a little town, but there must be a spark in little men that can burst into flame." And then that kind of like fades away as an audio recording actually comes on. You start to hear parts of late President John F. Kennedy's June 1963 remarks in West Berlin. It's playing around in the background. It's kind of like skipping around a little bit. It sounds a little creepy. And then you start seeing more on-screen text that says that the biggest weapon in the hands of an oppressor is, quote, the mind of the oppressed, end quote. There's all sorts of very bizarre Halloween, scary looking thing, very dark, haunting imagery. It includes masks, lots of ghosts. Like there's this one ghost emblem logo. It was in the first video. There's burning faceless mannequins. It looks like something out of a horror movie. It's really scary. As it's doing all of these different things, you keep hearing the various historic speeches in the background, and you see text that says stuff like, "Behind every idea, a belief. Cywar. Behind every choice, invisible hands. Behind every emotion, fire. The video ultimately ends with some seriously intense music, war footage, and the question, not out loud, written on the screen, quote, do you believe in the power of words and ideas, end quote? And then the answer, you see in all capital large letters, I mean, very large compared to all the rest of it, we believe. And then there's a link to the Army Special Operations recruiting page. Like, what? According to the branch's PSYOP career page, soldiers are trained to, quote, strategically influence and deceive, end quote, in order to, quote, help sway opinions and actions of foreign governments, groups, and individuals, end quote. Interesting. According to the Army major who created the video, speaking to the Associated Press ahead of the release, quote, it's a recruiting video. Someone who watches it and thinks, wow, that was effective. How was it constructed? That's the kind of creative mindset we're looking for, end quote. The major, who, no surprise here, asked not to be named, apparently is a member of the 8th Psychological Operations Group based at Fort Liberty, North Carolina. The same major was also responsible for creating the first PSYOP recruitment video 2 years ago, which created, as I mentioned, online chatter over its anxiety-inducing messages such as, in all caps, quote, we are everywhere, end quote. Yeah, that was a fun one. While it's illegal, in case you missed it, for the United States military to conduct psychological operations on American citizens, right, there are those who believe that they are not only capable of doing so, but they already have. Count me in that group right there. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Crow, commander of the Special Forces Recruiting Battalion, hopes the talk around the recruitment videos, oh, like what we're doing here, will help inspire people who are interested in this line of work. So technically, by reporting on this, I'm playing a part. Somebody out there might say, hey, this sounds cool, and they're going to go join the Army. That's on you. But it's interesting. Apparently, the Army is struggling to find recruits for everything, including this department, because apparently they're having trouble with this group, Johnny, because people who are in the psychological operations wind up going cuckoo. They have problems, mental health issues, anxiety, depression, and they eventually leave. Go figure. This is scary stuff, but what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that they're going a little bit nuts. Kind of, it makes me think that if you go into that sort of unit, you end up like Tim Robbins in Jacob's Ladder, you know, seeing the weird faced people for the rest of your life and not being able to get out of it. And this is, I mean, this is fifth generation warfare at its finest, isn't it? And we've been programmed for programs like this, programmed for adverts to drive us in. If they wanted to get us interested in psyops and military conflict in a conspiratorial way, then Call of Duty Modern Warfare was a perfect example of an advert for that. And a game I played quite a lot. I enjoyed the shoot 'em ups back in the day. But at the end of the day, they were indistinguishable from this advert that they've produced now. It is almost exactly the same as a dramatic shoot 'em up. And that's what they try and create, because that's the world they're trying to create. It's not even a lie. I mean, it's not even a psyop. It's not even false. It's they're trying to create this world where we're all going to shoot at each other and we're all going to hate each other. And I always get, I'm a little bit suspicious of those who military psyops and are based in North Carolina, because it's not that far down the road from where the CIA are based in Virginia. So, I mean, I get a feeling that you know where they get their orders from. And that's what we got now. Fifth generation warfare. We've entered into a new phase of humanity, and that phase is something else. A lot of this, I mean, in the near future, a lot of these adverts, a lot of the psyops will be run by AI. It won't even be humans that will be, they'll initially set up the program to run, and we won't know what's true or not. And there will be a long line of people who are ready to become American military psyop troops, the many of them, because that's the future. Remember, when this, for everybody listening, remember, World War III isn't about meat grinders. It's not like that. It's going to be something different. It's going to be death on the front lines, but it's going to be robots against robots, AI against AI. It's going to be a battle that most of the people who are fighting are going to be behind a computer screen, and they're going to be at home thousands and thousands of miles away from the front lines. And that's the recruits they need to bring in now. That's the future of their warfare. The future of their warfare is something which looks like what we can expect Terminator 2, probably in between the point when it's the 1990s to the point where the machines take over. This is where we are now. We're in the point just before the machines take over. And this definitely looks like it. I mean, I take it you got a little bit scared by watching this, did you then, Ruckus? Did you feel better now you know that a unit like this exists inside your country?
Oh, no, not at all. Quite disturbed. I understand history. This is not a new tactic. This goes all the way back to, I mean, probably before World War II, but World War II is often brought up in conversation because it's fairly celebrated, well-known PSYOP when the U.S. had a ghost army supposedly outwitted Germans using things like inflatable tanks, radio trickery, dressing up in costumes, impersonating people. That's all a psychological operation. So the game is the same, right? It's just that the playing field has changed and we're in this social media engagement thing. Now, this is where I get creeped out. It's like, how do I know the people that I'm friends with on social media are really not somebody who considers me an enemy and they're engaging in psychological operations against me as an individual? I don't like that feeling at all, Johnny. So Yeah. I'm going to have an interesting weekend. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I was seeing that in the chat earlier. I mean, and it's all around the place that people do believe that really what we've got is we're approaching a time where we will be in rooms full of people who we can't trust anymore. Some of them will be bots, but some of them will be working for the other side and will be employed through systems like this. Well, enjoy your weekend, Ruckus. Enjoy your last weekend on Earth before the military psyops take over and the robots are launched. And I will see you on Monday again, my friend. Thank you for being with me this week.
All right, I'll see you then, Johnny. Take care, everybody.
Awesome. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
The Home Secretary even weighed in, James Cleverly, criticising Sadiq Khan. Well, that's not hard to do because Sadiq Khan has been an absolutely appalling mayor. I was there in the London Assembly for 5 years questioning him about all the ridiculous things he was doing, all the good things that he wasn't doing, and the ridiculous statements that he was making about many different things. But James Cleverly has accused Sadiq Khan of failing on knife crime. Well, that's not a hard accusation to make because knife crime is rising in London, and from 2022 to 2023, there were 16% more knife crimes, a 16% increase in knife crime, up to 12,786 incidents.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country is all about.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's news talk, TNT. I am delighted to look across at the chat and see that Wild Heather has made it with Little Carol up to the Truth Festival that's going on today in the Lake District. She says it's dull but dry, unlike my glass. Tent is up. Cheers, and they're looking forward to having a wonderful weekend with like-minded folks. So really happy to see that they made it up there. That's a 6-hour journey in the car, you know, everybody likes one of those. Now My guest in this second hour is a man I hold an enormous amount of respect for. We presented a Ministry of Proof X Spaces together, which I'd love to do more of soon. And Josh Walkos is a married father to navigating the corporate world by day while writing about the history of government and industry corruption by night. His fascination with the past and its hidden truths fuel his writing, which can be found at wethefree.substack.com. A challenger of worldviews and conventional thinking, Josh considers himself an independent who resists all labels designed to eliminate nuance. I love him. His X handle is at Josh Walkos. That's Walkos, is W-A-L-K-O-S. Josh, my friend, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. How's it going today?
It is going well. Likewise, Johnny. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, I see you're in great demand nowadays. That's good to see. And you deserve any and all recognition coming your way. Can you start off by telling any aspiring journalist out there how they get to where you are today and what you're doing today?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, really, it starts with focusing on what you like, something that you have a passion about, a topic, and then just kind of diving in and doing research and building up your research and putting it down on paper. That's really as easy as it gets. With Substack and everything out there these days, you have no limitations on the ability to put your stuff out there to the public. So doing that and then building up a social media following by putting out engaging content and building up a followership is kind of the strategy that I took. And yeah, it's panning out pretty good so far. So just focus on something that you like and you have a passion about and put your thoughts down on paper, and the rest will follow, in my opinion. Similar to what you've done, right?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I tried to find my place in journalism for a while, and I kept, you know, I kept starting to write. You know how I'm sure you've been through this, and lots of people have been through this, where they write 100 words and they're like, I don't like that. And then they go on to the next thing and write another 100 words. Oh, God, I still haven't found a thing. But then eventually what you discover is that you're not finding it because you're not writing about what you're passionate about and what you love. And for me, it's going back in history. It's kind of like following family lines, following stories and narratives that can be put into words. And so, I mean, that's what sparks my flame. What sparked your flame at the start then? What was the thing that made you, was it just the COVID, or was like stuff like that, conspiratorial stuff, or was there something that you were like, oh, I got to get this out because of the passion?
I've always had an interest in writing, and it hasn't necessarily been political or about history. I actually started out writing about music. So I wrote for a website back in the early 2000s. It was based in San Diego, so they were like an indie music website. So I do a lot of reviewing albums and going out to shows and taking photos. And you know, just that was a passion of mine at the time. I still love music, but it was a good way to get free tickets to all these shows I wanted to go to. And then, you know, kind of hone my skills at writing, because writing about music is kind of difficult if you really think about it, because you're writing about something that you're hearing and a lot of subjective experience. So it was a way for me to kind of just hone my ability to put my thoughts down on paper about something that might be subjected to most of us. So it started off with that. And then, you know, life got busy and I kind of put the writing on the back burner. And when COVID happened, that's what really kind of motivated me to say, hey, I think I need to actually write something and put some information out there that might be of value to people. Because at that time, you know, we were just seeing lie after lie being trumpeted on television and in the newspapers. And I kind of came at it from an angle where, like, I'm just going to pick a topic where I've done research myself and noticed that they're just lying blatantly about these things. And then just attack that topic and put threads out online. It started off with threads, and then people started asking me, hey, do you have a article version of this thread that you're doing on X? And through multiple people asking me and encouraging me to do so, that's what I just went for it and got my Substack going and been blown away by the response. And, you know, we're growing a follower there, and I just can't believe how many people, and you know, I'm actually sitting on a radio show here with you talking about the writing that I've just started doing like the last year and a half. So it's been pretty gratifying.
Yeah, it goes quickly, doesn't it? As soon as you actually start building up speed, as soon as you start deciding on what you do and get focused, then people notice it. I did realize at the start when I was starting to write, I was writing little bits of articles or an article here, an article there, and then I was lost again because I hadn't worked out what my next article would be and I hadn't worked out the theme of my articles yet. So I kept getting lost. Listen, we're going to take a quick news break. We're going to news. So you're watching today's news talk on TNT.
Turn on the news.
I have a little news flash.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The auditing firm for Trump Media, owner of the True Social app, and its owner, Benjamin F. Borgers, were charged with massive fraud by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. In a daring incident on March 22nd at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, Chinese dissident Ling Huijian evaded an attempted forced deportation back to China orchestrated by Chinese embassy staff and associated individuals.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm with Josh Walkos, and we're speaking about journalism. And you obviously face similar pitfalls to me in your journalism. We're busy taking the theory out of conspiracy theory by adding proof to the conspiracy. So speaking of something that's been previously dressed up as fake news and conspiracy theory, fluoride in the water supply. Can you tell me about some of what you discovered about the mass use of fluoride from your extensive research?
Mostly what I discovered about it is, first of all, you hear about this fluoride in the water and most everybody you talk to automatically assumes it's a good thing for your teeth. Like that's just so for whatever reason, people have bought that wholesale and say, hey, we have to actually put a chemical in the water without your actual informed consent and blanket the whole population in order to fix people's teeth, you know, for however they managed to get that into people's minds and to buy it, I'll never know, but it worked, and they've been doing it since basically the 40s, and it's essentially a chemical byproduct of industry, and they just needed a way to get rid of this stuff because if you put it in the ground, it's going to poison it, so why don't we put it in the water, get with the dental industry, and come up with a story that this is actually good for your teeth, and it'll keep you from getting cavities at a time when, we didn't have, the best mouth hygiene in the country, and a lot of people were actually getting cavities, and we just didn't develop the technology that we have now. We're able to basically keep our teeth clean, and they use that as the excuse. And lo and behold, the whole time, step by step, they knew that it caused neurological damage from the studies that the government actually released. And it's not like people didn't step up and say, hey, this is troubling what we're seeing in these studies that work people who work for the government, because there's several instances you could point to where somebody had come forth with a report saying, hey, this is actually a potential carcinogen, and it could potentially lower babies' IQs with hard evidence through their own government studies. But every step of the way, somebody would step in and either fire that person or try and shut them up or ruin their career. Just so they can continually pumping these into the water supply. And you have to really wonder, like, you know, it could be written off to just a industry thing for greed. But if they're knowing that this is actually causing neurological damage and health effects on the wider public, you have to question what the real motives are behind that as well. I mean, you can't just say, hey, this is just chalk it up to being stupid and greed, because they knew and they had the documents that they suppressed that these actually was hurting people on a mass scale. And they can't compare it to say Europe, where they don't do it on such a wide scale. And all the arguments basically have been undermined. And recently there was a trial that happened that I'm sure you're aware of that Derek Brose actually covered. And I've talked to him about this, where they were waiting for the decision. I don't think it's been made yet, but yeah, they basically had a group of people who had sued the government because they knew that it caused neurological damage, especially in children, reducing their IQ. And their own report, which they suppressed, they had to get it released through a court order, stated that there's no levels of safe fluoride that you could put in infants' water. It's not going to potentially affect their development. So hopefully that'll break open the dam, so to speak, and then they will take this out of the water, but it's going to open up to a lot of litigation. I'm not real confident that that's going to be what's going to happen because, you know, the government doesn't want to ever admit that they're wrong, and they've done this for decades. So that's kind of what I found out about it, just looking, doing some cursory research. And most people don't think about it, but when you look into it, every step of the way, you see that they've known the whole time that it's bad for you, and yet they still keep doing it.
Yeah, it's crazy how this cycle keeps happening. Looking in the chat, and Penelope Pit Stops Go says, I haven't used toothpaste for years, ... coconut oil. And you can, Lord Melby said, you can smell the bleach and other chemicals in the water. I use reverse osmosis to distill. You wouldn't believe the muck that filter gathers. It's completely true. I mean, completely. So considering that we all kind of like have learned this and we're all getting to know this, why are people like us still painted as mad for reporting on things that are provably happening?
I mean, I think it's pretty simple, and you kind of answered that in your question, is that there's too many competing interests and money behind all this stuff. I mean, money was first attributed for the whole fluoride thing because it just is a byproduct that they needed to get rid of, and they couldn't dump it into the ground. So, hey, why don't we put it in the water? And they're selling it to townships all over the country, and they've been doing it for decades and decades. So the reason that we get attacked or we get called conspiracy theorists or try to discredit, and really anybody who tries to speak the truth these days, is because we see that there has been a regulatory capture by industry and a symbiosis with government, that they are working actively against the best interest of the public who they're supposed to be protect in favor of short-term profits that turn into long-term profits. And they'll do anything they can to basically cover that up and protect their own careers and their own hide, regardless of the amount of people that are hurt, because they can kind of pass the moral buck off to some amorphous entity, which is called the government, and they don't have to take moral responsibility for it. So if we try to take moral responsibility and speak out about it, we're the bad guys because we're actually shining a light on an issue that should never even happen in the first place.
Yeah, that term, passing on the moral buck, I think that really is like the key sentence that we can say with these things. You know, that's why they don't want to take accountability in their time. They want the future generations to take accountability for them. And it's a really interesting way how they pass that buck on all of the time. Now, I was talking about the dangers of artificial superintelligence in the opening monologue of this hour. What do you think artificial intelligence will become, in your opinion?
Well, speaking of passing the moral buck, I think it's going to become a framework in which they can do that plausibly. They could plausibly deny, you know, they could put the reins in its hands. And if something bad happens, they can just step back and say, hey, I didn't know, it was the machine that did it. And they can pass the moral buck that way as well. I do think that's, you know, there are positives of it as well, but there's a lot of potential negatives that should be very concerning to people moving forward. I mean, we are already seeing that the craze around it has already started to affect jobs, especially they tried to make it out to be blue collar jobs, but we're seeing a lot of white collar jobs are disappearing because of this, you know, within the tech industry itself. So starting to hollow that out. I think it'll be okay until we start seeing like a wide embodiment of AI. And we're starting to see that with the robots and things that are coming around a lot quicker than people actually expected. So there's a quickening happening, and they're devoting all these resources on these data centers, and they're asking for trillions of dollars. And I just don't know that they've thought this out, what they're actually building and what it could potentially do to humanity in the future. And, you know, I just don't see it turning out to be an overall net positive and as rosy as they like to paint it out in the media. You know what I mean? It's kind of a gold rush right now. We've seen that with technology in the past, and they're just short-sighted on it. And we're actually, you know, we're creating a super intelligent, you can call it a being, whatever you want, but who's to say that it's not going to turn on us and become like a Terminator type situation in the future, especially if you're putting this into actual physical beings. It's also screwing with people's conception of reality as well, with these deep fakes and everything that's happening with fake music, and it's just going to cause mass confusion and so more distrust than we already have. And we're at a pretty high level of distrust right now in society.
Oh, yes, we are. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
We come from a long line of farmers, and there's a sense of pride with being part of these multi-generational businesses. But there's also a significant amount of pressure. My senior year of high school, my dad made the decision that this world no longer needed him in it. I don't know if he was overwhelmed by the bills and checks that weren't going to be coming in because of the strawberries dying off, but it breaks my heart that my dad made a permanent decision for a temporary issue. Don't feel like you have to go through it alone.
Farmers have to take care of their physical and their mental health, because what's a farm without a farmer?
The mornings, that's my time. Watching the sun come up, I can have a cup of coffee and exercise if I want to. It helps me start the day with a sense of gratitude.
Yay!
Every day is a new opportunity. Don't forget to check in on yourself. Love your mind.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to today's News Talk, TNT. I'm here with Josh Walkos, and we're talking about a load of stuff that you can't talk about on the mainstream. That's what I've been doing for probably the whole show and for the whole week. We're talking about some serious stuff in this hour. And if we want to reach as many people as possible nowadays, we must diversify our style of media we create. So what do you think, Josh, is the most effective in your experience? Is it long-form articles? Is it threads? Or is it interviews? What reaches more people?
Personally, for me, it's been the threads on X. It seems to have really resonated with people. But then again, you know, you kind of, if you want to have a presence and build a followership up, you have to kind of do all the things, right? So I started off with the threads, but then people started saying, hey, this would be really nice if these threads were in article format. So I was like, well, I might as well start a Substack and start actually formally writing and converting some of these into threads and just writing on my own as well. And then now I'm doing interviews and kind of getting my face out there a little bit more. And that seems to be helping connect with my readership and following as well. So you kind of have to take a holistic approach if you really are ambitious and want to build a following and have some type of career in what we call media these days. Since it's been taken over by Musk, has been better than it was prior to it, but there has been issues with censorship as well. And I only think those are going to ramp up as we get closer and closer to the election. And you can already kind of see it. Doing long form threads, I think, is a really good way to kind of dip your toes into it, because people really like to see the sources and, you know, putting the information right in front of them on their phone, because everybody's on social media these days. And that's the way to kind of get catch somebody's attention and catch a crowd's attention and start building your followership up and kind of branch off from there.
Yeah, and it's hard to get people interested unless it's in their fashion or their style. And I have noticed your threads are extremely popular. I hate that word, seeing as I have a list. But anyway, Ruckus and I were reporting on the Boeing whistleblower dying of fast-acting infection. Do you think this is another takedown, or are we just prone to questioning everything nowadays?
I think you have to question everything. And then especially whenever you have two whistleblowers with the same company dying in 2 months, I mean, that seems pretty statistically improbable. And, you know, the problem with these things is that, as history has told us, we're probably never going to really know the truth about this. You know what I mean? People have an inkling about what happened. The first whistleblower, not a lot of people were even aware that this happened. He had actually testified and came in, and he was done. He thought he was done. He was, staying in a motel. And peculiarly, the government's own lawyers asked him after he was done testifying that first day, well, he thought it was the end of it. They came back to him after that and said, hey, we just want you to come back tomorrow because we have a few more questions that we want to ask you. Okay. So he's like, all right, I didn't plan on it, but I did. And then lo and behold, he died from a so-called gunshot wound to his head in the parking lot of that motel that same night. Okay. So that's super, super fishy. And now you got this other guy who is documented as blowing the whistle on the manufacturing processes for the 737 MAX for Spirit Airlines in particular. And he would not shut up. He kept on filing complaints. Finally, they just basically retaliated and they fired him, right? But he hasn't shut up in the interim since January. And this guy's a 45-year-old guy. It even says in the article that says that he died that, hey, this guy's been actually known for his healthy lifestyle. He's 45 years old, so he's not, in poor health. Then all of a sudden, he gets some mysterious infection, gets thrown into the hospital, catches MRSA in the hospital, and then they put him on a ventilator. It sounded like COVID protocols to me is what they put him on. Basically, and then he just deteriorated rapidly through the protocols, in my opinion, they put him in. And lo and behold, he is dead now, and he can't speak about the thing that he's been refusing to shut up about since January. We also had a recent testimony on Capitol Hill with several different whistleblowers who are right in front of Congress that didn't get a whole lot of play, and you can tell the media doesn't really want to touch on these too much because Boeing's a major player with military contracts and they take care of civilian flights all over the country as well. So this is something that they just do not want to talk or approach because of the implications for Boeing stock and the contracts that they currently have with the government for military purposes as well. So there's clearly some type of deep state thing going on with this whole Boeing thing. My wife actually is getting ready to go on a trip, right? And I had her sit down and watch this hearing with these whistleblowers. It was just, I think it was last week. And she was so disturbed by what she heard all these people saying, like four or five whistleblowers, that she checked her trip that she booked through work. And she's like, whoa, I'm on a 737 MAX. It was a straight shot. She was so spooked about it. She went in and rebooked it and actually inconvenienced herself to have a layover because, the way these people are talking about the manufacturing defects with Boeing is not very reassuring if you're going to be hopping on a plane and all the issues that they've had just in this year alone. So that tells you, if my wife is, she's diehard, wants to get on one flight and go somewhere. If she's that spooked, she'll actually inconvenience hours out of her time for a work trip to, based on what she heard, that should tell you there's a serious problem going on at Boeing.
Yeah, and if they can't pass the buck on down to the next generation, then they'll shoot people in the head or they'll probably stick them on ventilators. And it's basically the same thing nowadays. Very interesting you point that out. That seems to be like a really interesting way to try and get rid of a person, isn't it? To stick them on a mm-hmm. ventilator and give them the same protocols that we saw under COVID. I wonder where that conversation took place before COVID as well, about that same thing with the establishment. So this obviously tense times, geopolitically speaking. Now, moving on. Campuses all across the world are erupting in protests. What's your take on what we're seeing unfold?
Well, I talked to Burmese about this on Wednesday, and my take is that whenever you see the mainstream media, both left and right, jump all over an issue and start blasting it out all over the country ad nauseum with their own particular angle of the take, right, then you should be highly suspicious about the so-called organic nature of these protests. Now, that's not to say that the protesters do not have legitimate concerns about what's happening in Gaza and what's happening. That's not to take away from any of the legitimate concerns of what the Israeli government is actually doing in Gaza. So I don't want to make it seem like I'm downplaying that there is mass atrocities happening on a daily basis there and have been going on for years and years. But we do know that there are organizations that basically are training grounds for professional activists. And it just seems to me like this whole coordinated protest, we saw that there's a fast track bill that just came out through Congress that was basically anti-Semitism bill that was written by a nonprofit basically for the new definition of anti-Semitism. And that really what kind of clicked for me whenever I saw this coming through automatically saying, hey, we're going to need to put these new speech codes basically in that you can't say anything bad about a foreign government, regardless of what they're doing. We're going to call it anti-Semitism. So to me, it seems like these have been used as a way to a pretext to implement these types of speech codes that they're doing. And there's no end in sight. I mean, what's next after this? You know, if there's another foreign policy issue that we don't like that the United States government's doing, are they going to come in and add to this as well? We just saw with the FISA. They actually just reauthorized the FISA. And within that was a provision which actually legalized the ability of the government to say, go to a janitor's working in a tech building, and they can actually go to him, say, hey, we need you to spy on our behalf and put this USB port in this particular person's computer. And they actually legalized it through that FISA provision. And people don't even know that it occurred. So they're just chipping away at basically the Constitution and the rights that we're supposedly supposed to have right under our nose. And I just see as these protests are being used, regardless whether they are organic initially, they've been co-opted in order to push through particular agendas that they have in mind.
Yeah, I completely agree that's what's happening. I do try and tell people, because some people, I like what you've said there is being completely honest, and you don't use a fallacy within it. You're using logic there, but a lot of people skip onto this fallacy. Oh, it's corrupted and co-opted by Soros. So for that reason, all of the protests against what's going on in Gaza must be evil. You know, that sort of like base logic is something that really, really frustrates me about this.
You see the right jumping on it as like Hamas supporters, right? So that they catchphrase it or tag it as, oh, these are terrorist supporters, Hamas is. So that in itself too, from a person who wants to be objective about things, should automatically raise your haunches and being like, wait, if they're already catchphrasing this and characterizing things, you know, they're probably doing this for some political agenda, right? So, you know, I like how you said there wasn't a fallacy involved, because there are legitimate concerns with what's going on there. But unfortunately, we do have a professional nonprofit class. For instance, the Tides Foundation is a huge, huge booster, which basically is a breeding ground for a network of different nonprofits where they literally have their pet projects for social justice stuff for the most part. It's all kind of leftist politics. And they will give people money, what they call them fellows, but they're really just training them to be professional activists. So a lot of these people who are leading these protests are professional activists, and they know that they have a line to these kids who maybe not be as they don't have the knowledge base to really kind of understand the dynamics that are going on. And they use them as useful idiots and as basically cannon fodder to put out in front of everybody and create the perception that they're in the right. But you have to really question where these motives and where all this money is. You know, it's all coming from these nonprofits, which are also tied into the government and intelligence agencies as well.
Yeah, what you're saying about non-profits and non-governmental organizations, well, that's where professional activists have been trained for decades and decades now. That's why we're in Ukraine, neocons and others have placed them into various countries and seen. I was talking yesterday about the 30,000 NGOs that were the root cause of the 2004 Ukraine elections going towards the West and causing everything that we see today. It's quite amazing. That do you think one of a potential panacea for these problems would be the idea that non-governmental organizations, especially foreign ones, should not be allowed to work in so transparently, so hidden in the country.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a way to reform the system, but this isn't something that's new. It's been going. I was just actually reading The Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Renee Warmser. I don't know if you've heard this book, but it was written in the 1950s. It was all about the Rees Committee, okay, which was a committee that was established to investigate the nonprofits in America. So the big ones, the Rockefeller's Brothers Fund, the Ford Foundation, Carnegie, all them. It was an actual investigation through the Rees Committee in Congress where they released a 900-page report basically saying, we investigated these nonprofits and they have been infiltrated by communists or communist ideology, and they are no longer on the side of America. They are trying to transform America into a collectivist society based off the Russian or the Prussian education system. And all this other communist, basically, ideology they were injecting through the grants, through the people that they were training. And this is, like I said, been going on since the 40s. So this isn't something that's new. It's just a different flavor of it. And there's way more money involved in it that's considered dark money that they can then funnel through various organizations that can have anonymous donations, and they can funnel it through another one. So it's virtually impossible to actually trace where this money is coming from and to know the true intentions of what's behind it as well.
Yeah, I tell you, you're a brilliant mind. I love working with you. I love talking with you. I think you're doing great. What are you up to now? What's coming up next for the next 20 seconds? Quickly, 20 seconds. What are you doing next?
Right now, I'm working on something about this new drug called LifeuCell. That's a cancer drug that has been fast-tracked approved. But I've delved into the studies involved with it, and let's just say it's disturbing of what they're willing to do and allow people to be basically sacrificed at the altar of progress in medicine. So you can find that probably a thread on my Twitter, or go to wearethefree.substack.com and subscribe, and I'll be posting something about that as well.
Thank you, Josh Walcott, for coming on. Thank you.
Thanks, Johnny. Love you, man.
Excellent. And that, my friends, has flown by. Yes, it was. There's people in the chat saying, yeah, mingling and ding-long, we need more hours, mate, because it flies by. And that was another week on the Johnny Vedmore Show where I've been blown away by some of my guests. I want to give a special shout-out to our regular listeners who are traveling for 6 hours plus to the Weekend Truth Festival, including Wild Heaven, Little Carol. Have fun. Don't misbehave too much. Up next on TNT is the Mark Marano Show. And remember, my friends, stay safe, stay awake, don't go changing, and thanks for being there with me all week. See you on Monday on today's News Talk TNT.